It pleases the court. Good morning, Honorable Justices, Justice Berger, Justice Holland, Justice Ridgely. I am Neil Dignon of the firm Draper & Goldberg. I represent Pacific West Group in the appeal before the court today. I'd like to thank the court for its time and attention to this matter. The case is about interpretation of Delaware Superior Court Rule 69G and the effect of the reinstatement of a mortgage after judgment on the default that underlies a foreclosure. By way of some background, in December of 1994, William and Michelle McCabe executed a promissory note mortgage in favor of the appellee Greenpoint Mortgage Company. In December of 1999, they transferred the property to William McCabe solely and refinanced through Greenpoint. The property was refinanced by two loans, a senior mortgage and a junior mortgage, both issued by Greenpoint. Greenpoint then assigned the second mortgage to Pacific West Group, the appellant in this matter. Pacific West did not record its assignment. William McCabe.
This assignment came about with the same parties who were involved in the foreclosure, or is it different entities, different parts, different offices?
Different entities, Your Honor. Pacific West is an investor who buys mortgages on the open market as they are traded. So Greenpoint, as the issuer, then sold the mortgage to Pacific West, who then became
the second mortgage only.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, tell us, while we're interrupted briefly, what's Pacific West total loss in this case? What's the monetary loss?
Approximately $30,000, Your Honor.
And how did that happen? If the two liens were less than $100,000, I realize they didn't record their assignment, but why did they lose money? Putting aside whatever they paid for the first mortgage, why didn't they get the money on the second mortgage?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
Well, tell me how they lost $30,000, and then I'll rephrase the question.
Okay. William McCabe defaulted on the first mortgage, which Greenpoint still held. Greenpoint foreclosed the first mortgage, thereby extinguishing the lien held by Pacific West. And at the time, the outstanding balance on the second mortgage, principal, accrued interest, fees and costs, etc., was approximately $30,000.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
There can still be an action brought on the bond, right? Was there a separate bond?
That is correct, Your Honor. But in these circumstances, the reality is the debtor is typically judgment-proof, particularly in a case like this where they have lost title to the real estate that secured the loan.
So you're telling me that the $30,000 is entirely attributable to what happened with regard to the second mortgage. Is that correct?
It is attributable to the foreclosure and extinguishing of the second lien, yes, Your Honor.
Well, if the second mortgage was of record, why, and it had been assigned, why did Greenpoint think that it didn't have to pay anybody when it had assigned the mortgage? You know, why wouldn't they have acknowledged the fact, well, there's a second mortgage, we assigned it, so, you know, we just can't merrily go on our way? Which is Justice Ridgely's question. Why isn't this a dispute between the banks?
Essentially, at this point, Your Honor, it is a dispute between the banks. Pacific West's position is, as the court observed, since Greenpoint had a mortgage, a second mortgage, they assigned that second mortgage, they were aware that that lien existed, and they were aware of who that lien had been assigned to. Under Rule 69G, they had a duty to give notice to that second lien holder that they were foreclosing and potentially extinguishing that lien.
I know you're talking about extinguishing the lien, but if we look at Woolley on practice and procedure and we look at other things, as I understand it, $100,000 was paid at the sheriff's sale. Is that right?
I don't know that, Your Honor. I don't recall off the top of my head what the sale price was. I think that's correct.
So the sale price was more than the first mortgage?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that correct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
So when you pay off the first mortgage, what happened to the rest of the money? Normally, it would go to pay the second mortgage.
Yes, that's true.
And why didn't it here?
At this point, Pacific West has not made a claim for the surplus funds. But I believe that the surplus funds were insufficient to cover Pacific West's outstanding balance.
All right. Well, let's come back to the merits of this appeal. We have a situation where your client didn't record their assigned lien. And if we just assume we're a record notice case, estate, we've got the bona fide purchaser for value who does a lien search and doesn't find your client's interest. And now there's a request to set the sale aside. Between the bona fide purchaser of value who had no notice of your interest and your client sitting on their rights by not recording it, why should your client be able to defeat the purchase by this person who had no notice of your client's involvement?
The duty lies with the seller, Your Honor, to make sure that all parties who are entitled to notice are noticed. And I won't say that it's common, but it's not unusual for sheriff sales, even with third-party purchasers, to be set aside. And in those circumstances, the court, as a matter of practice, the court below will require that whoever seeks to have the sale set aside put the bona fide purchaser in status quo ante. So while there will be – I'm sorry, go on.
All right. Well, let's go back to my earlier question. I'm still confused about what the parties did in this case. If the bid for the whole property exceeded the first mortgage and there's money left over that would have gone to the second mortgage, it would seem logical your client would have come in as the assignee and said, whatever money is left over is ours because you assigned the mortgage to us. And they would have gotten that money. It would have been deducted from the $30,000, and we'd be talking about the difference. So just help me understand why that did not happen.
Because my client did not elect to proceed that way, Your Honor.
And that's what led to my other question. So now your client's decided they'd like to defeat the right of the bona fide purchaser for value. And tell me why they should be able to do that when there was no record notice that the bona fide purchaser of value could have ever found about your client's involvement.
The bona fide purchaser for value, Your Honor, conceivably in this case, because my client was not noticed by the seller, got the property for less money than he would have, because my client most likely would have bid up the price to either buy the property at sale or at least bid it up to the point where the sale price would have covered the first mortgage and the entirety of the second mortgage.
Well, that suggestion's inconsistent with your client's conduct, because even though the price exceeded the first mortgage, they didn't even ask for anything towards the second mortgage. If they would have done exactly what you said, they would have had to come in and then say, distribute the proceeds of the second mortgage to us. But let's put that aside.
Tell
us why, or do you agree, that if your client would have recorded their assignment, we wouldn't be here?
Possibly, possibly not. Oftentimes, sheriff sales are set aside because recorded assignments are missed, and parties do not get proper notice. Certainly, it is likely that we would not be here. And if the court will indulge me and allow me to address the previous question regarding the surplus funds are still available. At some point, Pacific West can still seek to recover them. But Pacific West's position remains that the sale is defective because they were not noticed by the seller.
Now, the surplus funds are being held by the sheriff, or who has them?
I'm trying to remember which county we're in. I just blanked out first. They would be held, yes, they're held by the sheriff in Sussex County, Your Honor. It depends on which county. In Newcastle, the sheriff holds the funds for approximately 6 months and then transfers them to the court. In Kent County, the sheriff transfers the funds to the court immediately. Sussex County, they hold them pending application and then upon after review, they disperse them.
Let me be sure I understand everything here. Your client did not know that there was a foreclosure or a foreclosure sale. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And how is it that your client ever found out about it? I mean, your client found out about it after the fact,
They did find out about it.
How did that happen?
They never informed me of that. They simply called and said, we have a problem. Can we do something?
Who called to say there's a problem?
A gentleman from Pacific West named James Cotton.
Okay, but how did Pacific West find out, ultimately, that there had been a foreclosure and a sale of the property?
I cannot give the court a definitive answer to that question. Oftentimes what will happen is they will do, particularly if accounts are in default, the mortgage companies do various types of inspections. They may have done a review of the tax records and found that the record ownership.
Okay, it's not that important anyhow. So in terms of what happens, your client holding a lien on the property that's not recorded, doesn't know that there's been a foreclosure, finds out about it after the fact, and the amount of money in addition to the first mortgage that's obtained through that sale is something less than $30,000, right? Because $30,000 is how much it would take to make you whole.
That's correct.
And, you know, your decision not to proceed to just recover that excess money is because that wouldn't cover everything, right?
That's correct, Ron.
So do you have a claim against Greenpoint directly for anything other than whatever they got? The excess, that is.
No, Your Honor, we would not.
So the only claim you would have would be for the excess money from the sale, if you wanted to pursue that, which would be less than your $30,000.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Or what you've done here, which is an effort to undo the sale altogether so that you can go back in and protect your $30,000 either by bidding up the price or actually purchasing the property, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. And if I may, Your Honor, I just want to make sure that I clarify one point for the record. When you initially asked your question, you inquired as to a lien that was not recorded. The lien is recorded. If it were not, the lien would not be properly perfected. What happened was Greenpoint perfected the lien and then assigned it, and the assignment is the document that does not appear in the records. And for the record, there is no requirement that assignment be recorded to be perfected.
Okay, and at the outset, one of the other justices asked about the parties, and you said that they aren't actually the same parties. Greenpoint is the party that foreclosed, right?
That is correct, on a first mortgage.
And Greenpoint is the same Greenpoint that assigned the second mortgage to your client, is it not?
That is precisely right, Your Honor.
So it's not a different party. It's Greenpoint.
Perhaps I misunderstood the question, and maybe if I recap the positions of the players, I can clarify it. Greenpoint originally issued two mortgages. It assigned the second, the subordinate lien, to Pacific West.
Okay.
William McCabe subsequently defaulted on the first mortgage, and Greenpoint sued William McCabe. Part and parcel of the execution process in a foreclosure is notice to all interested parties, notice to all lien holders. The strange juxtaposition in this case is that Greenpoint, as the assignor of the second lien to Pacific West, was thereby had actual notice of Pacific West's holding the second lien, yet notwithstanding that fact, simply noticed themselves as the record holder of the second lien, notwithstanding that that was the one party in the world that Greenpoint knew did not hold the second lien.
Thank you.
Well, do you know anything about the actual numbers that are involved? Because my indication is the first mortgage started at $71,000. Then we have the second mortgage that was at 14, but you tell us somehow got up to 30. after the assignment and $100,000 was paid at the sale, which would mean if you paid off $71,000 plus whatever, do we know what was left off, what's left over to go towards the second mortgage?
I would be working from memory, Your Honor. I could look it up in my papers.
All right. Well, you're into your reserve time. Maybe you could find that, you know, when you come back, you can tell us.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And can you also tell us if, or if you know now, what was the consideration paid for the assignment?
It would have been the actuarial value of the amount on the loan.
Do you have that number?
I do not.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Lest we interrupt you after you get your thoughts organized, can you tell us something about the actual numbers?
Excuse me, Your Honor. Good morning. Let me just, may it please the Court, Christy J. Dowdy, Whittington and Alger, on behalf of the plaintiff, Greenpoint Mortgage, the appellee. If I may, Your Honor, the figures that I have from the second LEV fact, which initiated this second sheriff sale, totaled approximately $85,000 or
$86,000. Let's start with the payoff on the first mortgage. What was that?
Your Honor, the payoff on the first mortgage, I would have to get that information. I didn't pull that out either, Your Honor, because the...
Right, I'll stop the clock. And do you have it with you?
I will. Yes. If I may, Your Honor, thank you. Thank you for the time to obtain the information. I have before me the sheriff's cost sheet, and the total judgment showing is $94,253.04.
Is that on the first mortgage?
Yes, Your Honor.
$94,000.
Okay. Yes, and that takes into account the principal balance, which is reflected of $79,726, together with interest that is accrued and late charges, foreclosure fees and costs. And if the sale is confirmed, there is a transfer tax of 3% and sheriff's fee of 3% as well. So that would take it up where in the neighborhood of $99,900.
$99,900. So we have the, and the bid was?
The bid was $100,000, Your Honor.
So probably we know now how the $100,000 was arrived at.
And yes, Your Honor.
The result would be that the sheriff's sale on the first mortgage would extinguish the second lien.
In essence, yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
So to that extent, Pacific West would get nothing.
That's correct. If all the figures are correct that I'm working with, and certainly those would be rechecked before any final request is made of the sheriff, then yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Your Honor, I think that the key here is, was there an abuse of discretion here by Judge Bradley in denying the motion to set aside the sheriff's sale? It's a deferential standard, as Your Honors are aware, and there is broad discretion instilled in the Superior Court to make a decision regarding whether to affirm the sale and deny a motion to set aside that sale.
But before we get to abuse of discretion, how is it that your client didn't give notice to Pacific West? What happened?
Your Honor, 16 months prior to the sale that occurred,
right.
The sale occurred in May of 2006.
Right.
16 months prior to that is when this assignment occurred to Pacific West.
Right.
And ultimately, my client gave me the information for the service transfer that was effectuated to West Coast Servicing. And that information was used by my office. We did give notice of sale to the Greenpoint, which was the lien holder of record in accordance with Rule 69G.
Greenpoint was your client, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And we gave notice to West Coast Servicing, whom we had been advised was servicing the loan. And
which loan?
The second loan, Your Honor.
So you were given the wrong name, is that it, or what?
Well, we were not given Pacific West's name at that time from our client. We were given West Coast Servicing. As in the mortgage industry, as Your Honors may be aware, you've got mortgage companies, and sometimes they don't do all of their servicing. Sometimes they appoint other companies to take in the payments, to receive appropriate notices, things of that nature. And in this case, our information was that West Coast Servicing was the servicer for the second loan.
So, and second was that lien. Just a mistake? West Coast Servicing was not the servicer, or what?
To the best of my knowledge, Your Honor, it is the servicer. That has not been disputed. It has not actually been addressed by Pacific West in their paperwork or otherwise.
What's the relationship between West Coast Servicing and Pacific West Group? Is there something we could find of record that says there's an agency relationship so that notice to the servicing company would constitute notice to the Pacific West Group?
Your Honor, I am not aware of any record of that relationship. That is not typically how loans are referenced. They're referenced by the recording of assignments and things of that nature.
So you're making an analogy. Let's suppose you have a mortgage and you escrow the property taxes, and you know who has the first mortgage and they're doing the escrow. By analogy, if your theory works, if you find out that Wilmington Trust is paying the property taxes and you never send the tax bill to the property owner and you send it to Wilmington Trust, but something happens, you would say you're allowed to foreclose or have a tax sale even though the tax bill never went to the property owner because it went to the person you thought that was paying the taxes.
Respectfully, Your Honor, no, that is not the case. Notice is given to all lien holders of record, title record holders, all in accordance with Rule 69G. And the bring down, the initial title search was done, and then the bring down was done in April 2006 to find out this exact purpose. Were there any other parties that needed to be provided interest?
Wait a second. Here's the problem I'm having. Greenpoint knew that it had assigned the second mortgage.
Correct.
And knowing that, Greenpoint advised its attorney, give notice to the holder of the second mortgage, right? In a way. They told you to get in touch with West Coast, give notice to West Coast Servicing.
That is correct.
The reason for that was because West Coast Servicing, in some sense, was supposed to be the holder of the second mortgage, right?
The servicer of that second mortgage, correct.
Okay.
And
there was no distinction made by your client or by your office between the servicer of the second mortgage and the holder of the second mortgage, the fact that they may be two different entities.
At that time, no, Your Honor, because we did the title bring down and gave notice to the party of record, which was Greenpoint. If 16 months after the assignment to Pacific West, they had recorded their assignment at any point in that time frame.
Right, but wait a second. If we were dealing with parties that you didn't know about, seems to me that's a slightly different situation. But when your client assigned the mortgage to Pacific West and gave notice to some entity because they knew that they had assigned it to Pacific West, they didn't find West Coast Servicing in any bring down of a title search, right?
That's correct. They advised us of that.
So there was an effort made to reach the party that had been assigned the second mortgage because you are the ones who had assigned it.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that effort was made.
Okay, so that leaves us in a posture where there was some effort to give notice, but apparently it wasn't to the right party. And your explanation for that is what?
That in this industry where loans are transferred very frequently, that it is incumbent upon the party that holds the lien to record in a timely fashion to therefore trigger 69G, which then requires any party that is going to have a sale with regard to that property to give notice to that lien holder.
Okay. Let me ask it a different way. If your client knows that it assigned the mortgage to Pacific West Group, what is the process by which notice is given to somebody other than Pacific West Group? Anybody other than Pacific West Group? You see what I'm getting at?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't work within that mortgage company. However, my understanding would be that when the assignment is done, they must have been made aware at some point that West Coast Servicing was the servicer for Pacific West. And, in fact, that can be shown as prior to the first scheduled sale that was to occur. Notice was given to West Coast Servicing, and shortly thereafter, Pacific West contacted my office and obtained the reinstatement figures, and those were sent. So at that point, West Coast Servicing must have given notice to their client, Pacific West, and put them on notice of that share of sale, and that sale was stayed.
So if we can piece this all together, what you're suggesting is that although you may have picked technically the wrong party to give notice to, it's clear that it wasn't really the wrong party because West Coast Servicing did get in touch with Pacific West, albeit perhaps not in a timely fashion, but did get in touch and told them that there's going to be a foreclosure on this property. And as between you and opposing your Pacific West, your position is we made an effort to notify the party that we believed was the proper party. But to the extent that we got it wrong, it really isn't our problem because it was Pacific West's responsibility to make itself of record, and then we wouldn't have made a mistake.
That's exactly the point, Your Honor, okay. And that's what Judge Bradley held as well.
Okay.
But I understand what you've added to that today, which wasn't clear from the record, is that on a prior occasion when you tried to notify Pacific West, you had notified West Coast Servicing, so you had a history of knowing that contacting West Coast Servicing was a successful way of getting notice to Pacific West.
Yes, that's the facts as we see them, Your Honor.
But
that's right.
The further fact is that notice to either West Coast Servicing or Pacific West was given of this actual sale.
Yes, Your Honor.
They got no notice of this actual sale.
Your Honor, the affidavit that I signed does show that that West Coast Servicing was sent notice of the second sale. Now, I noticed that the certified mail card and the return receipt were not able to be located, but it's my understanding and my recollection, Your Honors, that notice was sent to West Coast Servicing prior to that second sale.
Now, the root of the requirements for under Rule 69 is actually a statute, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, that language in the statute is the following persons whose real or equitable interest in real estate may be adversely affected by plaintiff's cause of action shall not be deemed to be necessary parties and shall not be required to be joined as a defendant in mortgage foreclosure actions. One, lien holders. And it doesn't say recorded lien holders. It just says lien holders. And two, tenants seized of an estate for years or at will. Notice in writing, however, shall be given to the above classes of persons in the manner prescribed from time to time by the civil rules of the Superior Court of the State. So the statutory obligation is to give notice to the lien holder, not to a servicing entity of any kind, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor, and based upon the information that we had at that time, we felt that we had given notice to a party that would convey it to the unrecorded lien holder at that time. I hope that answered Your Honor's
question. Well, what would be the legal basis if we were to say notice to a servicing company is okay? What would be our legal basis for saying that?
The basis is that Pacific West did not record, and therefore under the language of Rule 69G, notice is to be given to lien holders at the address which appears upon the recorded or filed instrument creating the lien or upon the record of the lien, or to counsel of record for the holder of the lien, or such addresses as not ascertainable, or if it's not ascertainable from the public records, at the last known available or reasonably ascertainable address. So our position, Your Honor, is that because they failed to record the lien after a 16-month time frame, that as between the parties and the fact that you have this third-party bona fide purchaser that's entered into the picture, the equities lie in favor of affirming the sale.
Well, let's assume they recorded the lien and notice was given to West Coast Servicing. What would be the legal basis for saying that that is appropriate or lawful?
I'm not aware of, unless there's something of record with an agency relationship that has been established between the two, then I believe that there would be a basis for counting on that type of notice to West Coast Servicing. However, Your Honor, that is why we do the bring down search, and that is where the only lien holder of record showing for that lien was Greenpoint. So notice was given there as well as to the servicer.
And is there any significance to the fact that 69G1 does not expressly refer to record lien holders, whereas 69G3 and 4 does?
Excellent question, Your Honor, and perhaps that's why we're here today for the oral argument, because there's an area there. I suppose it might be open to interpretation, but I think that the interpretation given to 69G with regard to the actual address to be used, the interpretation of that given by Judge Bradley is correct, and it's on its face. If the address is not available on the lien holder, or notice must be given to the address on the recorded lien holder, the lien holder of record, and that was done, Your Honor. There are other, just as a practical matter to Your Honors, there are other steps that Pacific West could have taken. They could have filed an entry of appearance in the foreclosure proceeding, which would have then made them attorney of record, and notice would have been given to them there. There's a duty.
You mean when they made it current? When they brought the first mortgage current, that's when they should have entered their appearance, so that to the extent it subsequently fell into default, they would get notice.
At any point, they could have done that, Your Honor, but certainly at that point, perfect opportunity to do that. We wouldn't be here today. As Your Honors are aware, the other requirements with regard to giving notice to parties are pretty strenuous with regard to advertising in newspapers, publication in various 10 different locations within the state. And, you know, they had knowledge that this account had fallen delinquent once. I think it was a little reckless of them not to record their assignment to assure that if it happened again, they would be given record notice. They would be given notice in accordance with the statute.
How much money was your client paid for the assignment, if you know, and how much money was tendered to try and accepted to bring the mortgage current?
If I understand Your Honor's question, are you asking how much for the initial assignment?
Right.
I don't have that information. I'm sorry. I don't have that within my records. And the amount that was tendered to reinstate the first prior to the first sale was between $13,000 and $14,000.
Okay. And that's been credited to the – so that's been paid and not included in this judgment. Is that right?
It's my understanding that has been credited to the to the LevFac figures, and certainly that would be verified again before there would be any check cut if the sale is affirmed.
Well, it's not articulated this clearly in the opening brief, but there seems to be a contention that once the arrears was paid and the mortgage was current, that the first foreclosure action should have been dismissed and any subsequent action should have started anew. And to the extent that wasn't done, you know, that's a problem here. But what's your response to that? If there is a foreclosure pending, a judgment has been entered, and it's brought current, why shouldn't the judgment be satisfied? Or is there some adverse implication for your client? Is there a way to clear the record by dismissing the action without satisfying the judgment? Or tell us why what happened in this case is the way it should be done.
Okay. First of all, if you look at the relevant mortgage document, there is no right for any other party to reinstate the loan. And that right belongs to the borrower, Mr. McCabe. And the contractual language, the mortgage language, makes it quite clear in paragraph 18 that that can only occur, or that he can only reinstate prior to a judgment. If a judgment has occurred, he does not have a contractual right to cause Greenpoint Mortgage to cease their foreclosure proceeding at that point. I think that a couple of things. The credit will be given prior to any the credit for the reinstatement funds either has been given in these figures or will be verified that it is given. And I think that it's important in order to preserve the entire foreclosure process that that can be a quite a lengthy process. If we were to vacate the judgment, then we'd have to start from scratch, and it's a lengthy procedure with all the advertising, notice given, and there's nothing that would require us to do that under the rules. There's no cases cited by Pacific West. There's no statutes, nothing that would require that. The point of it is that the judgment will be it's valid even after partial payment is made. Just take into consideration other types of judgments, money judgments of some kind. Once partial payment is made, it doesn't invalidate the judgment itself. Credit is simply given for the payments that are applied to reduce the amount that's due. And I think that same premise applies in this case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you again, Your Honors. If I may begin by addressing the last point that the Court discussed first. Okay. Essentially, what appellant's position is that upon a reinstatement, regardless of the source of the funds, and the timing, or let me rephrase that. In a circumstance such as this, where the payment of the reinstatement funds is not timely and the account has been accelerated, the judgment is the controlling document, meaning that the entire outstanding balance on the account is due and owing. As such, under those circumstances, there is nothing that the debtor, there is at any time the creditor can begin execution. Essentially stating that notwithstanding that $14,000 was paid to bring the account current through a date certain, notwithstanding, say hypothetically, the debtor continues to pay timely monthly mortgage payments for another year, the controlling document remains the accelerated judgment, and at that point, the mortgage company can, on a whim or caprice, begin execution on that judgment and take the property.
And what's the problem with that? I mean, isn't that what the contractual relationship between the parties provides for, that, you know, you get if you get to a point where you're not paying off your mortgage, we can bring an action and bring it to judgment so that we can foreclose. And if in the meantime, after we've done that, you decide you're going to start paying again, then you're proceeding at sufferance because we still have a judgment and we can execute on it at any point.
No, Your Honor. Reinstatement is not necessarily a legal term of art, but it is certainly treated as a term of art in the mortgage business. When a reinstatement is paid and the account is cured, the default is cured through the date certain, the concept is the account relationship between the debtor and the creditor goes back to square one. And I posit to the court that under these circumstances, since the tender of the reinstatement funds was not timely, Greenpoint's recourse at that point was to refuse them and continue with the foreclosure. Once they accepted and negotiated the payment on the reinstatement without any reservation to the debtor, they waived their right to treat that payment as anything other than a reinstatement and put the account back to square one.
And how is this a position that you have the standing to bring? Wouldn't that be between Greenpoint and Mr. McCabe?
Well, Your Honor, if the underlying action that was executed on that resulted in a foreclosure that extinguished my client's lien interest is defective, then yes, my client does have standing to step forward and say, you extinguished our lien via a defective procedure.
What's the relationship between your client and West Coast Servicing? Is West Coast Servicing your client's company?
Not that I know of, Your Honor. My client, in our communications, made no reference whatsoever to West Coast Servicing. I did check the dates with my duty of candor to the court. The assignment was executed in January of 2005, and counsel for Greenpoint made reference to a communication from their client, Greenpoint, that servicing was being transferred to West Coast Servicing. My client has never made any reference or indicated to me that there was any relationship between them and West Coast Servicing.
Right. Well, going back to the earlier portion of your argument, when Justice Berger asked you, how did your client find out about this, there seems to be some circumstantial evidence that if, in fact, West Coast Servicing got notice of this sale, eventually that was made known to your client, although not in a timely way.
I reviewed the correspondence between my client and our office. The only reference that my client gave to our office was an email that said, we have heard that this property is going to sheriff's sale. They did not inform us how they came to know that.
Thank you. Thank you both. And the court appreciates your arguments. We'll take this matter under advisement, and the court will adjourn.